The consideration this evening, as most of you know, we have been dealing with the Second of Corinthians, and this particular part of the Apostle Paul's letter was a very critical one, an important one at the time of the history of the ecclesias, as we know. Because we discover that whenever we read the Apostle Paul's letters, you'll find inserted in all his letters is a major issue that he's very concerned about. And the issue is that he's recognized in his journeys to visiting different ecclesias and being in contact with this ecclesia at Jerusalem quite often, that the problem that has to be dealt with, and that is that of the ecclesias, there is a poor element. There is a group of brothers and sisters who are finding it very difficult to be faithful to the Lord. And so the Apostle Paul has been encouraged and a commission given to him earlier on that whatever he does, wherever he goes, he should encourage the brothers and sisters of that ecclesia to consider in their prayers, in their actions, and in the monetary way to help these other ecclesias. And there's a power in that. My original title for the talk this evening was The Power of Giving. And I emphasize that because the giving as a brother and sister isn't isolated to a Sunday morning or putting a certain amount of money in a collection bag. It expands more than that. The power of giving is beyond just that particular time when we give money into the bag. And we may explain to you that as we go on. Now, in my life in the ecclesia, I've seen many evidences of the power of giving. And there were two brethren at one time, going back a few years, and neither had any money in their pockets. But this one particular brother, he did a job for a neighbor where he worked. One of the neighbors asked him if he would do this little job for him in his lunchtime. And he did it, and this person was paid a certain amount of money. And later on, he was conversing, discussing with another brother regarding events that were coming up. And this other brother said that he'd heard that there was a fraternal gathering in a certain city, and he just longed to go there. He wanted to go to this particular ecclesia because he knew many of the brothers and sisters there, and he just had this urge to go to this fraternal gathering to find fellowship with brothers and sisters that he had met before. So this brother, who had been paid a certain amount of money for this little job, reached into his pocket, took the money out that had been given, that all he had, and he gave it to the brother and said, "Here, you go. You go to visit this fraternal and enjoy it, and with God's blessing." Now, to me, that action was the definition of true giving. We all give, but in the eyes of this God, it's the motive behind the giving. That's it. We can all give money in the bag. We can all do this for that. And as the scriptures tell us, sometimes it's not for the main reason that we do it. And we'll talk about this a little later on. But as they say, this drama that I was a witness to, at that particular time showed to me the real definition of giving. And that's the reason I tell you that story at this time, because I want to make it quite clear that it may be not really understood within the ecclesia and their own selves, the real purpose, the real definition of giving. It expands more than just, as I say, the giving of a certain amount of money to the ecclesia. And so the right spirit is the giving of generosity, and as Paul says, not by extortion or compulsory. Sunday morning, we're almost compulsory to give into the bag. And why do we do it? Well, sometimes we do it because we don't have a brother on the left or right to see and say, "Oh, Brother Mike, he didn't put any money in the bag. What a cheap character is." I've had that said to me more than once, besides this little incident. But regardless of that, this is the way it is. And so I've always been impressed with the regulation. You've heard with the life of the story of Queen Esther and Mordecai, Now, if you observe and study the Feast of Purim, as we know was associated with Esther, because of the feast on that occasion when they remembered in the feast that they had been liberated, they'd been made free from their captives and so on. And so in this Feast of Purim, there was a regulation attached to it. And the regulation in this Feast of Purim was that it didn't matter how poor a man was, he should seek out someone who is poorer than him and give a gift. And I think it's a beautiful definition of the generous giving of giving, as it explained in this particular feast. And it's the kind of, the power of giving is the kind of action that can develop so much strength, support, and especially the fellowship and the friendship within the ecclesia. This is what Paul, as we go into the consideration of chapter 8 and 9, this is what the Apostle Paul, is trying to achieve. Because we know, we'll explain later on, within these ecclesias, there was a certain amount of disruption. There wasn't a unity that was in accordance with God's desire and pleasure. We should see there's a fracture within the ecclesias, and the Apostle Paul was saying that if you give to others in more ways than one, then what you will do, you're bringing people together, fusing them together, and developing a fellowship and a friendship that can achieve so much and will support and hold the ecclesia together. And so we remember, do we not, that the Apostle Paul, who was a letter writer, because this was his means of contact with these ecclesias, he gave himself over many times to the writing of letters. This was the power of his giving. And these little things we see into the insight of this man who was willing to spend and be spent. The Apostle Paul, he was constantly in touch with his brethren and sisters in so many ways. We remember that when he was in prison, when he was laboring, when he was tired, when he was suffering abuse from other people, he all constantly was in touch with his brethren and sisters. He was pouring out giving at all times. And so it was when he was in Philippi, we remember there that he found time to sit down and to write to his brethren and his sisters. Now that is an art that is dying in this our generation. We know that we have the electronic means that today of the cell phones and everything else, that we can communicate with others. But to me, a lot of those things are abused. How many of them are used to the advantage of contacting, giving and supporting and building up and fusing people together by the things that we love? So when he was in Philippi, the Apostle Paul remembered all the ecclesias. I always remember Brother Tennant telling me on one occasion, we were talking about the power of prayer, and he said that when he prayed, he had a whole list. When he prayed, he had a whole list of brethren and sisters that he knew who were having difficulties in their life in so many ways, and he would approach the throne of God, putting before God these men and women. And I thought how beautiful it was, and many brethren and sisters knew that he was praying for them. And by this, by the giving of this, giving of the thoughts, considerations before the throne of God, he was fusing these people together. And as we know, that out of giving, as Paul shows in this, in chapter 9 and chapter 8, he says, out of giving, it stimulates thanksgiving. And that's the way it should be. Out of the giving to others, it stimulates giving. Thanksgiving. Not only from the receiver, but from the one who is given to it. Because when you give, it should automatically create within your mind the thoughts that you also have been given. And this chapter 9 concludes with that. When God says, you know, you've been given, you gave all this, but think back. It rebounds on you. Think back what you've been given. And as we know, this is the way God designed it, that it should be this way. And so when I preparing these thoughts here, with the subject of the giving, the making up a collection to be sent to the ecclesia at Jerusalem. You remember the Apostle Paul says in chapter 8, which we discussed a while ago, he said in chapter 8, verse 2, this. He said, consider these ecclesias, you brethren and sisters of Corinth, consider what these other ecclesias have done. And he says, how then in a great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded unto the riches of their liberality or their being liberated. For to their power I bear record, yea, and beyond their power they were willing of themselves to give. And so what the Apostle Paul says here, that these other ecclesias like Philippi and those of Macedonia, he said they were existing in poverty, deep poverty. And another translation says they were at rock bottom. But how many of us would be in that situation or that desire and be motivated in that way? So the regulations under the Feast of Purim, if you think you're poor, and you may be poor, but there's others poorer than you. So whatever little thing you have, that person doesn't have it, so you share with them. And when you share with them the power of giving, you two come together. And you strengthen each other, and you lean upon each other, and you help each other to find the kingdom. So when I could read in chapter 8 and chapter 9, I thought again of the Apostle Paul. The Apostle Paul has been one of my favorite characters in the Bible. If I'm permitted to get into the kingdom of God, that's the first one, maybe apart from Jesus Christ, that's the first one I want to meet with and to talk with and walk with and listen to him and ask him to explain things that I couldn't understand in some of his letters. And then I thought again, if the Apostle Paul came next Sunday to our ecclesia and was asked to give the exhortation, I wonder how he would look upon our congregation. I think he would be well pleased. I think if the Apostle Paul came here in our ecclesia the way it is today, I think he would be favored to encourage us and to commend us for what we've done. But at the same time, he would see there that we are an ecclesia of giving. I think the last Sunday we took recollection of the collection that we had. And other visitors come to our ecclesia and they're amazed at the amount of money that are given into the collection. And that's fantastic. But it would go beyond that. He would see the giving in the ministration, especially of the sisters. And when you're on the way out, you'll see that one sister has put a large box there. And that large box is for you, brothers and sisters, to give clothing for a family, as we were told Sunday morning, of a lady who has three children of her own, is suddenly now, with the opening of the front door, given three more children by a man who says, we can't afford these children, my wife has left me, and so you've got to look after these. So now instead of three, she has six, and she's living on her own. And this appeal by through a sister of our ecclesia has asked that we should help. So that box there is what that is for. And so I think the Apostle Paul would commend us for what we're doing within the ecclesia. But there should never be a never falling down of this. Within the ecclesia, as it is with a game of sports, the tempo must be kept up at all times. And this is what must happen within the ecclesia. We should never let down our colours. We have to constantly be together, because we should see this is what the Paul is striving for, is to fortify, because he sees the possibility of the breakup of ecclesias, the loss of brethren and certain brethren and sisters to the things of the world, to be discouraged by the things that have happened within their ecclesia. And this must be the power of giving, infusing us together to not let anything avoid us in finding the kingdom. Now we know, speaking of the Apostle Paul, that we can never fault the Apostle Paul in his life. His motto in life was that to others he says, be followers of me, even as I am of Jesus Christ. The Apostle Paul, as we know, was a man who, when he was brought to see Jesus on the way of Damascus, when he recognized his high calling, as he said, I'm an apostle born out of due time, when he realized the mercy and the grace of God that was given to him, and that's what he dwelt upon, and constantly would tell his audience of his conversion, he would constantly tell him what God, the God of Israel, had given to him. And so what he's saying is that he constantly gave thanks to his God, and he was saying, well, you got to be followers of me, even as Jesus Christ, if you want to share the kingdom of God when God gives you the greatest gift of all, and that is eternal life. So if you go to the 1st of Corinthians, if you go to the 1st of Corinthians chapter 9, this is how we see the Apostle Paul. This is what he confesses, he makes his testimony or his confession in this particular time. First Corinthians chapter 9 and at verse 19 we read this. This is what the Apostle Paul says. I have become a free man because God has given me the liberality, has given me freedom from the power of sin, the freedom of being entrapped in the things of the Pharisaic ideas. He's removed those things. He's given me the light, and I now have a new life. This is it. He recognized what God had given for him. For he said, though I be free from all men, yet I have made myself a servant unto all, that I might gain them all. Not to himself, but to Jesus. And unto the Jews I became a Jew, who is willing to give up certain things that he might converse with the Jews, that I might gain the Jews to them that are under the law, as under the law, that I might gain them that are under the law. To them that are without law, as without law, being not without law to God, but under the law to Christ, that I might give them that without law. So you see, his giving was to the Jews, and we know that he was an apostle unto the Gentiles, and to those who were without. His whole life was given for other people. Though I have been made free from all men, I have become a servant to all. And we know a servant, his whole role to his master is given. In the old homes of England, the servant had to be there 24 hours. And he had to be alert to a bell that would ring and demand him, you are needed right now in a certain area of the big house. And that was the way it was. He had to give himself, or they had to give themselves to this particular way. And so the Apostle Paul was committed in this way. Now, when we read the letters of the Apostle Paul, we read chapters 8 and 9, we see that he's striving for two purposes. He's striving for two things. One thing is that he recognizes the plight of the brothers and sisters in Jerusalem. He'd been to Jerusalem a few times. And when he was there and visited these brothers and sisters, he recognized the tears, the sorrow, the heartbreaks, that things were going on, that were rupturing the foundation of this ecclesia, this first ecclesia of the first century. Because what he saw there widows who no longer had the benefit of the things of the temple, because these women and these families, they decided to accept Jesus as their King, Lord, and as their King, as their Lord and their Master. They confessed that Jesus is my King. And we know that was in opposition to the rule in Rome especially, that there is only one King, and that is the king, the emperor, Caesar. To him you bow, to him you serve, to him you commit yourself, And these men and women said, we will do that if it is in accordance with our God, but our king is the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. And this is the way it was. And because of that, they were because of that, we know that their husbands were taken and many of them put to death, so they became widows. We also know that these women, if they were widows, they depended upon the temple for a welfare check or money every month or so what it was. Immediately they were recognized as following Jesus the Christ, who many of the temple figured he was an imposter. They were cut off with these things. So what the Apostle Paul is trying to achieve in these, especially these two chapters, is one, that he wants to relieve the heartache and relieve the discomfort of these brothers and sisters in the Jerusalem city. To provide for them the natural wants. Money to buy bread, to buy food, to buy clothing for their children. To relieve that so they didn't have to worry about those things, but they could concentrate on things which were above and not upon the earth. But the other thing, because he was the apostle unto the Gentile, another thing which was very important, which come before the natural thing, because we know that if we believe in God, God will take care of the things of tomorrow. And so we remember that this is what he wanted. He prayed that by this action, because the Corinth ecclesia was made up, the majority of them were Gentiles. Jerusalem was made up mostly of Jewish brethren and sisters. But we know through the walking and visiting these ecclesia that there were now, at this particular time, a friction among certain brethren and sisters. The Jews didn't have any respect for the Gentile element of the ecclesia. So there was constantly a type of a warfare going on. The Jews said, well, if the Gentiles come, they've got to be circumcised. The men have got to be circumcised. And they wanted to fold, they wanted to bring the law of Moses into the law of the new covenant and fuse it together, which would cause disunity. And there was no purpose for it. They hadn't learned the whole purpose of Jesus Christ and of his coming and at the time that he would have to die upon the cross. So the Apostle Paul, as unto the Gentiles, this was what he wanted to do, was to fuse these Jews and the Gentiles together. Now, what he was hoping to do, because Corinth at one time, when the Apostle Paul went to Corinth, we know that God says, Paul, you don't want to come here, and you're here now, but you're not in a very good condition physically and spiritually, because you've had problems in Athens, and you weren't able to deal with the debaters there, the Stoics, and you come here a miserable man. And you're a little reluctant, like Jeremiah and some of the prophets, you're a little reluctant to get involved in this work. You're backing off and giving. What's the problem? And God says to him, Paul, I have much people in this city. What he was saying was, I've got all these people, and you have to give out 100% to see to it that they develop an ecclesia which was in the first century. And we know that in the first century, there was a condition within the ecclesia which was divine. It was the element of the divine principles of giving. We know in Acts chapter 2, do we not, that there were certain brethren who were very poor. There were certain brethren and sisters who were enriched because of their employment and so on. But these brothers saw that those who had the money, like the brother who had the money in his pocket at a certain time, they saw that these men who had this advantage, they recognized the need to give because they had been given. God had given to them Jesus Christ, who made it possible that they could find a way of salvation to receive the greatest gift of all. So what we know, as you're all familiar with the atmosphere in the ecclesia at Corinth, it says that they gave so that they had all things in common. And this is beautiful as we know, from that particular time. And they did this, as we said, because of divine, it was a divine arrangement of giving. So the Old Testament depicts and portrays God in heaven as the one who gives all. And I think of one quotation from Psalm 115. As we know, the Psalms portray at all times the God in heaven as the one who is willing to give wherever possible that others may benefit from later on. I think there's a beautiful quote in Scripture that says that God has no desire that any should perish. Well, thank you very much, sir. Okay. And so this is this quote in Psalm 115, and it says this: "The Lord shall increase you more and more, you and your children. You are blessed of the Lord, which made the heavens and the earth." Now, this is the God that created the heavens and the earth. And right from the beginning, there is a divine principle established by God that all men, if they want to have sweet fellowship with this God, the Creator, they must be a part of it and follow through with it. So the psalmist reminds us of this in verse 16. It said, "The God in heaven, the great Creator, the heaven, even the heavens are the Lord's, but the earth hath he given to the children of men." Now, isn't so we see almost like an equal given there. We see that the heavens, the glories of the heavens and the heavens above belong to the God. But God said, "Yes, I have all this. But what I'm going to do for you, my people, I'm going to give you this planet Earth. And I want you to give so that it is gives me pleasure in seeing what you do to it." So it's kind of a ricocheting of this principle that God gives. He gives to man. Man gives to the earth to make it a thing of beauty for him and for people to be a part of it. So that is where we get the principle. And this principle was adopted by many of the men and women who came upon the earth. This divine principle, it was fused into, put into their lives so that they gave pleasure to God. And I could ask you to give me some of the illustrations, and you would quickly come up with them. And we consider Abraham dealing with Lot. Where shall we take our herds to feed them? Abraham says, "Lot, I give you the choice. You choose whatever you like." And really we know that this is what Abraham did with his son on. We know that Israel of old, when they were having sweet fellowship with their God, one of the recognitions that these people were in tune with their God was that the people were willing to build a house. They gave of their time, they gave of their money, they gave of the things that they had to build a house that God would dwell with them, for that's what he wanted. So you see, this giving would bring into this harmony of those with the eternal God and with the creatures of his handiwork. You remember that when they built the tabernacle, they gave in a spirit that maybe hasn't been repeated for a long time. You remember it was, they came to Moses and said, "Well, we need all this stuff." And every day they kept bringing, because one thing they wanted was fellowship with their God. They wanted God to dwell there. So they gave and they gave. And then Moses says, "Enough." I don't think it's ever been heard in an ecclesia that God said to them, "You've given of enough." But that's what happened. We remember in Exodus 36, verse 5, it says, "You have brought enough." And this was the commission that was given to them. And this was, I want to emphasize it, this Moses, and it was pleasing to God, because Moses says, "Okay, on a given day, I want each family to bring a certain amount of stuff. And if you don't bring it, then you could be reprimanded because of it." There wasn't any of that. The call went out to give. The call went out, and so there's no extortion, there's no compulsory. These people, it was of generosity. They were genuine in their offering to their God at this time. So the Apostle Paul, as going back to his consideration of his letter, when we go into the Galatians, we see that right from his ministry, remember when here in Galatians chapter 2, in his ministry, that he'd been up to Jerusalem for a while. Now he was going to commence his first missionary journey. So what was one of the priorities of this man, the apostle unto the Gentiles, when he went out? He was going out, and so he was told by the ecclesia, right, you've got to do this. You've got to tell these brethren and sisters certain things that you have learnt from the convention in Jerusalem. But the most important thing was this in Galatians 2, verse 9 and 10. Because it says there, when James and Cephas and John, which seemed to be the pillars of the ecclesia, perceived the grace that was given unto me, the grace. Paul, all the time he keeps saying of it, the grace of God, what God has given to me. He said, they gave to me and Barnabas the right hands of fellowship, that we should go unto the heathen, or the Gentiles, and they unto the circumcision. But he says there, the emphasis here at this time on this. And you could see James saying, now, Paul, I want you to listen up, because there's something a bit more important than you going to preaching Jesus Christ for this. He says there, verse 10, only that they would, he appeals to them, only that they would, that we should remember the poor, the same which I was forward to do in the giving of gifts this way. And so that's what the first part of the commission given to me. He said, you've got to preach Jesus Christ, Paul and Peter and James. But by the preaching of this, dovetail fused together, is the action of giving, the poor. And when I read that, the giving of poor, of the poor, it steps out a little further than the giving of money. It steps out to the giving of so much to brethren and sisters one. There's a lot of brethren and sisters who are poor in more, they've got enough money, but we can look at them and say, they're poor people. They're poor spiritually. And that is a major thing in the brotherhood today, as it was in the ecclesias of old. There were many brethren and sisters who had become the lost sheep. There were many brethren and sisters who had become the son who had left the home. And the prodigal son. That's where they're poor in spirit. And that is so important. And this is where we can move in and help them and feed them and strengthen them and make them rich in the name of Jesus Christ. They should not be poor. And this is where we fail. Speaking for myself. Because we have brothers and sisters who sometimes don't attend the meetings because they're poor in the spirit. They're not strong enough. They haven't got committed much to them because they have something that bothers them and troubles them, and somebody said the wrong thing to them. Somebody's avoided them in all this way. They are poor in the spirit. They're not fortified with the spirit of the word. And so they are weak in this particular way. And this is where we go in this way. And so scattered throughout his epistles, we see that his earnest desire was to fulfill this appeal to the ecclesia there. And so we see here, we're going to consider the verses now into the second of Corinthians in chapter 9. But the reason I gave the lead up to that is because I feel that by considering the subject of the giving, we will understand now what Paul is getting at when we read chapter 8 and chapter 9. The problem was with the ecclesia at Corinth, was the problem that has happened in many ecclesias throughout the world, and the problem with the ecclesia that I have belonged to in the past is that there is not the giving in the spirit and the giving of finances and the giving of commitment as Jesus gave in the Apostle Paul, because there are too many other things to take care of. There's a lot of ecclesias that are bogged down with bickering about little things, spending all enormous time over the things that doesn't matter. And this is what happened at the ecclesia at Corinth. When the ecclesia at Corinth was established, it was a strong ecclesia. They were almost a replica of the early days of the ecclesia at Jerusalem. But Paul, from afar, observed, and he says to them, I have boasted about you, brethren and sisters, in your ecclesia, of how much you have given and how strong your ecclesia is now. He said, when I come to you and to take this collection which you have gathered, he said, what am I going to find? Am I going to find the brethren saying, well, Paul, we had great intentions to have this fund ready for you, but we had to deal with all these little problems, whether we should have windows open, windows closed, we should do this and all that. He said, you've just been bogged down with this. He said, I'm going to be embarrassed when I come to you because I've told the ecclesia of Thessalonica and Philippi and all these, what wonderful brothers and sisters you are. That a year ago you promised that you, above all the ecclesia, would have this fund ready so that the brothers and sisters in Jerusalem would know that you are thinking about them, giving to them in the full capacity of this money that I fancied, and also that you want to be fused together with the Jews and the Gentiles, and that you have sweet harmony with them in this particular way. Okay? So I always say that it's very difficult to listen to somebody speak for an hour, and so I figured that halfway through the talk, we would have a hymn. And I decided to have... Well, people think this is my favorite hymn. Actually, it is one of my favorites, but it's also my dear wife, so I take the opportunity when I'm speaking is to have my favorite hymn because nobody else has them. And so, but I do hear through the grapevine that they like them, so they don't mind me having them. So we're going to sing hymn 377. Okay, we'll find it somewhere in here. Want to make that official then?
All right, hymn 377 then. In the bud of early springtime, in the days of early youth, when the heart is fresh and tender, Lord, impress us with thy truth.
When the heart
Sure, you'll all agree with me. That is a beautiful hymn, and it tells us a little more of the God that we worship. So, going into 2 Corinthians chapter 9, we read the first two verses in this way. The Apostle Paul is sending this letter, which has been written, we think, by Titus and by Timothy, for more reasons than one. So, in verse 1, the Apostle Paul is saying to this ecclesia, he says, I'm going to talk about the ministry and of your offering at this time. And he reads this way. For as touching the ministry to the saints, it is superfluous or not necessary for me to write to you. In other words, I don't really have to write about this. And then he says in verse 2, for I know the forwardness of your mind, for which I boast of you to them of Macedonia, that Achaia or Greece was ready a year ago, And your zeal hath provoked very many. And then he's saying in those two verses is then, well, it's not really necessary because we've already discussed this more than once about this offering that you said that you would give to the Ecclesia of Corinth. And he said, I know the forwardness, I know the determination of your mind to do this, and because of it, he says, You were one of the first ecclesias actually that sent money to Jerusalem. And he says, your example, he says, I've shown to these other ecclesias and to spur them on that they may do likewise. Verse 3. Yet he says, I have sent the brethren lest our boasting of you should be in vain in this behalf. That as I say, ye may be ready. Lest happily if they of Macedonia come with me, and they find you unprepared that we say not ye, should be ashamed in the same confident boasting. And so what he, it's self-explanatory, the verse of this time. So there's a little, one little lesson in there that I would like to remind you of. And that is, that's happened in our ecclesia. Verse 2, and it says, your zeal hath provoked very many. Now, if you consider our ecclesia, I belong to this ecclesia with some others now for 50 years, I guess, or something like that. Seems a long time. Anyway, I've been here a long time. But I can remember this ecclesia that was not the way it was today. Now, I'm not looking back on the ecclesia of those brethren and sisters who lived at that time. But the reason I mention this time, because as Paul says, other ecclesias have benefited from you, and they have developed things within their ecclesia. And so I was thinking about this, and I thought there's many things that this ecclesia didn't have in the way of the provisions of this ecclesia. So what we have now has been promoted by other ecclesias. And we look at this. The sending of cards to brethren and sisters who are sick or something like that, that's a project that we've adopted from other ecclesias. The tea on Sunday evening, which is very good, we never used to do that. That was promoted by other ecclesias. The youth conference that we have, that was promoted by other ecclesias. Bible schools, the business meetings on a Thursday night instead of another night. That's all ideas that other ecclesias have promoted us to do. So what I'm saying here, that we can promote other ecclesias to do other things for us. So this is what the Apostle Paul says in verse 14. And we're going to verse 5. Therefore, I thought it necessary to exhort the brethren that they would go before unto you, and to make up beforehand your bounty or your offering, whereof you have had notice before, that the same might be ready as a matter of bounty and not of covetousness. Now what the Apostle Paul is saying here, when you read his appeal to the poor, the Apostle Paul doesn't use words like currency, money, or anything like that. He doesn't use those words because he doesn't want to give emphasis on this material thing of money. He always used the scriptural definition of this collection, and that he uses the word offerings and the gift and all these kind of things for the brothers and sisters. Now in verse 5 we read this, but I want to read it again. Therefore I thought it necessary to exhort the brethren that they would go before unto you and make up beforehand your bounty, whereof you had noticed before, that the same might be ready, notice this, the same might be ready as a matter of bounty and not of covetousness. Bounty or a gift. So this is what the J.B. Phillips, he translates it in this way. So if you read that verse and then see what J.B. Phillips said, he said it should be read this way, it was better. He said, I should like you, brothers and sisters in Corinth, for the gift to be a spontaneous one and not money squeezed out of you. And I thought, well, that's great. That's the way it is. That's the way our giving should be. And that's the way it is on a Sunday morning. If you give money, you put money into a bag, and you really maybe don't want to give the money, or you don't want to give it a large amount, and you put a few coins in there because you know brothers and sisters are watching you. That's not right. That's not right. It's not right. And we say the reason we say this is because we reflect back on some of our older brothers and sisters that talked about the days of the Depression. And he said when the brethren collected, they counted the money up at the end of the meeting, and they put the money on the table. He said they found a number of coat buttons and washers within the collection. And I said, well, we're talking now in the 30s and people didn't have much money at all. And I said, well, that's not very good. He said, no, but these brothers and sisters were ashamed if somebody saw that they hadn't put money into the coin bag. And so they put a washer or a button in. And he said, that's a reason. Now, the scriptures tell us God is not mocked. And the brother next to you may think you put in a few dollars, but God in heaven knows what you put in. And so, as we know with the, when Malachi tells them, he said, if you give that kind of offering to God, God's going to say, as he did in those days, shut the door. I don't need that kind of offering, and don't give it to me anymore. So we read on in this way, and we remember that the lessons that give us, as he says in Galatians, that God will not be mocked by these things that you give to them. Now, in verse 9, we read this, as it is written. So what Paul's given is an example of giving, isn't he? It's a beautiful way. And Paul uses it. The Apostle Paul refers to 25 books of the Old Testament. And nobody can question him in the things that he said, because as with Jesus, those opposed him, approached him, Jesus wouldn't say, well, you scribes and Pharisees, this is what I think. He didn't say that. He says to them, what did Moses say? What did you read in the prophets? And that was the strength of his argument. That was the strength of his defense and the persuasion of them. He did in this way. So the Apostle Paul carries on in this way, speaking about the giving and the way it should be given. And he says this. He said, this is the way it should be, verse 6. But this I say, he which soweth sparingly, whatever action he be given is, he said, if you are sparing in the giving, he which soweth sparingly shall reap also sparingly, and he which soweth bountifully shall reap also bountifully. Every man according as he purposeth in his heart, so let him give. That's where the motivation, that's where the moving, that's where the right giving is from the heart and not what others may see. That was the fault of some of the elders of Israel. They wanted to be seen of men. And Jesus and Paul said, that's no given. God will throw it on the dust heap because he doesn't want it. And so he says, you give not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loveth a cheerful giver. And so so I encourage all brothers and sisters to let their Bible be a working book and to make it easy to understand and know the contents of it. So in my Bible, not that it's an example to everybody, but in my Bible, I give every chapter a heading. So that I can look in that page and I know what's in chapter 9, chapter 8, because I have a head in there, the Lord giveth, loveth a cheerful giver. The emphasis is on the cheerful. Yeah, the giver there has got to be a cheerful giver of generosity and not of extortion. And so what he says here, he goes on to say, he's quoting, he goes down into verse 9, as it is written, he hath dispersed abroad, he hath given to the poor, his righteousness remaineth forever. Now he that ministereth seed to the sower, both minister bread for your food, and multiplieth your seed sown, and increase the fruits of your righteousness. And that was the fault of Israel of old, that when God said he would give them, he would never let them go without in the wilderness journey. We know that he gave at all times in different ways and different avenues and different approaches. But he was always given to these because he wanted to have sweet fellowship with these men and women. He wanted to dwell with them. And the means and motivation of being able to achieve it was this giving and giving in this way. God giving the people. Giving thanks to God in appreciation and gratitude. Whatever. So we know in the wilderness, he gave them the bread from heaven, as it says here. He gave them necessities of life in this way. And so I think one, as we would all agree, the most beautiful example of giving, as of generosity and not of extortion, as we know, is the widow mite. That's one of the most beautiful pictures in the scriptures of giving. We know these men came and they wanted to be seen of men, and they had these collection boxes, these coffers made of metal, and so they took their shekels and they held them up high down the funnel and they threw it down and sheer everybody all around could hear, oh, what a wonderful man, he's given all that money. And Jesus was sitting over there in the shade and he saw them and he was sickened in his heart by their form of giving, because he knew it wasn't from the heart, it was to be seen of men, and it was no value at all. And then he saw that widow, as we know, remember, he saw that widow, and she came forward ashamed, with her head down, knowing that she wanted to give more, but she gave everything that she had. And Jesus said, she's given more than all those men put together, because she was giving what she had, just as that brother. Another brother wanted to something, so he gave to someone who was poorer than him, and so that he could achieve this moment of satisfaction and enjoyment in his life, to make him a stronger brother, to be associated with others. So we remember, do we not, it's in this way given to us. And so Paul was taking a copy, as we know, from the Psalms, regarding this way. And in verse 11 we read, being enriched in everything to all bountifulness, which causeth through us thanksgiving to God. For the administration of this service not only supplieth the want of the saint, but is abundant also by many thanksgiving unto God. And this is what is important in his talk at this time, that in the giving, the receiver would acknowledge this, and immediately they were developed within his virtue, developed within his way of thinking, and that was of thanksgiving. And this is so important as an offering to God, our thanksgiving. They thanked those who supplied, they thanked their God for their brother in this way. And how often do we do that in our prayers? How often do you thank God for a brother or a sister that has done something for you? And It's so important to us in so many ways we can do this, and in this particular way. So the Apostle Paul, as we know, he wanted to go to Jerusalem. And the reason, as he mentioned in another, he wanted to go to Jerusalem because there was a special feast on there. And the Apostle Paul enjoyed these Passover feasts. He thought it was necessary as the spiritual Israel to go there. And this particular time, we know that he wanted to go, it tells us in Acts 20, he wanted to go to Jerusalem because the Pentecostal, the Pentecost feast was on. And you remember that beautiful feast was a time of giving. It was a time of remembrance. It was a time when a lesson was being taught. And so we read in, I think it's in Acts chapter 20, verse 16, this. Paul and the others have been traveling in so many places, but his intention behind all these visits in all these ecclesias was to go and be a part of this Pentecost feast, which remind them of the day of Pentecost when the brethren received, were given of the power of the Holy Spirit. It says in verse 16, for Paul had determined to sail by Ephesus because he would not spend the time in Asia, for he hasted, if it were possible for him, to be at Jerusalem the day of Pentecost. And we know that at the time of the day of Pentecost was the occasion when there was the wavelengths who were taken and they were offered to God, the two. And so this was a backdrop, you might say, for Paul's endeavors at this time in giving to bring the Jews and the Gentiles together. And so it was with this feast. Remember, it's recorded in Leviticus that it was the time when the wave offerings were made, the two together, which amplified this purpose at this particular time. Now, there is much to be added in these chapters, but the question is, when we conclude our consideration of this chapter 9 especially, we wonder, did this offering, a collection, or I like to call it an offering, did it achieve what Paul hoped for? Did it relieve the brothers and sisters in their plight? Did the fellowship prosper between the Jews and the Gentiles? We know that we have a little insight to it because of the history recorded for us in Paul's letters and in the Acts of the Apostles. But we'll never know to its fullest extent until we go into the kingdom. And then we'll have, through the eye of looking back, we'll be able to know and see what happened within the ecclesia. And so we remember that it says in the Proverbs that he that hath a bountiful eye should give unto others. And Paul, when he wrote to the ecclesia at Rome, said, we then who are strong should bear those who are weak. And so, brothers and sisters, it is that if when you look back on the consideration of these two chapters tonight, 8 and 9, if you can't remember anything else, just remember that quote of the Apostle Paul, the Lord loveth a cheerful giver. And when you do this, dwell upon the word cheerful, and then you will know that we are being told there giving should be one of generosity and not of extortion or of a compulsory thing. Now, we remember, do we not, that Jesus said on one occasion, for he also, as we know, considered the poor in his congregation. He considered the poor when they came and they had no food. And he fed them. He gave them bread from heaven in more ways than one. He fed 4,000, he fed 5,000. But in one of his talks to his congregation, he reminded them of this. He says, remember this, you have the poor are always with you. And I think that's what we should do in our ecclesial activities and our own personal lives, is to remember this. If we want to do anything for our ecclesia, if we want it to remain in the condition that it is healthy, so that when Jesus returns, he will see that his house is in order and a place for him to dwell in. And then we have to be motivated by his reminder that the poor you have with you always. And don't isolate it and don't direct it on the collections on Sunday morning. Look at it as your whole brethren, that I am poor in spirit and I need the fellowship of brothers and sisters to tell me that I shouldn't be disappointed in certain things that I want to do and can't do. I shouldn't be frustrated by other things that are happening. And they will encourage me in this way. And if you want to do this, you can give it in small portions. And so when a brother or a sister is in difficulties, you only have to go to them and recognize that they're poor in spirit that time. And all you have to do is say to them, "Brother, I'm praying for you. I'm come before the throne of God, and I thank God for that brother or that sister who has given me of their time, their thoughts, their consideration, their praise." And so when you go before the judge, he will then look on you, and then he will be able to see how much you have given. And how did the Bible paint that occasion? It says that the brother who thought he was so lofty and that came before Jesus, and he said, "Jesus, I preached every Sunday for you. I did all this in the ecclesia." And so Jesus, "Yeah, but you got a lot out of it, didn't you? You were puffed up. You liked that position." He said, "But on Monday, there was a brother sick in hospital. Did you go and visit him?" "I didn't have time." And Jesus would say, "Then I don't have time for you, brother.